Welcome to the Project Sleep Podcast. For those of you who've listened before, you might be expecting to hear from Julie Flygar, Project Sleep's founder and CEO. But for this special series of podcasts on sleep apnea topics, I'll be your host. I'm Emma Cooksey, the Sleep Apnea Program Manager here at Project Sleep, and I'm so glad you're here. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. We created the Sleep Apnea Squad series to allow listeners to dive deeper into specific topics relevant to living with sleep apnea. For more on today's topic, please check out our corresponding toolkit, which is available for free on our website to download, print, and share. The link to the toolkit and other Sleep Apnea Squad topics is in the show notes, or you can find the Sleep Apnea Squad page at project-sleep.com. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to consult your own medical team while making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating or a review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. So without further ado, here's today's Sleep Apnea Squad episode.
Welcome to our session on making CPAP comfortable. I think that sometimes we overlook that a lot of people starting CPAP therapy sometimes struggle a little bit to get used to it. So that's all what today is about. So if you're a new or struggling CPAP user, you're in the right place. So today we're joined by Kath Hope. And Kath is the founder and CEO of the Hope to Sleep charity in the UK. She's also a patient living with severe OSA and nocturnal non-obesity hypoventilation. Kath was diagnosed with severe OSA around 18 years ago, same as me. And like many, she struggled at the beginning of her CPAP therapy journey with comfort issues. She went from dreading bedtime to now never considering sleeping without her machine for a full night's sleep every night. Her passion was to help other people living with sleep apnea, which resulted in the formation of a charity that currently supports around 25,000 patients in the UK and even worldwide. So I'm so thrilled to have Kath with us. She's such an expert on this. And then next we have Dr. Sarah Silverman. She's a Stanford-trained sleep psychologist and behavioral sleep medicine specialist who's passionate about helping others improve their sleep through science-backed and non-medication treatment approaches. Dr. Sarah is an expert in cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia, the first-line drug-free treatment option for adults with chronic insomnia. CBTI is an effective way to improve sleep naturally and overcome chronic insomnia without medication. So she's also, the reason she's here today is she's also an expert in using CBT for positive airway pressure therapy to get to adapt to it. So it's an effective way to help with any difficulty relating to using CPAP and provide drug-free assistance with PAP therapy adjustment. And you can connect with Sarah's all over social media. So her social media handle is at Dr. Sarah Sleep. So you can find her all over the place. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Silverman.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so these are just some, before we get stuck into our conversation all about this topic and answer some of your questions, I just pulled out some different topics that I think are going to come up, sort of themes that we're going to see again and again as we talk about this. So the first thing is just how differently people are supported with CPAP. I'm mainly talking about the United States, Kath, because I know that in the UK, it's largely similar. But here in the United States, it really can vary between people having one-on-one mask fittings in home CPAP setups, and then it can range right through the gamut to people that are getting no help at all. So when I started CPAP, I was given a plastic bag with a CPAP machine and a mask that didn't fit my face, and really no support and no idea of who to call. So that could be the situation you're in, or you could really get a lot of support and have people that you can call. So just to recognize that. And then the second thing is what we're talking about today is comfort issues. So things like, we're going to talk about all of them, but like skin irritation or difficulty getting comfortable sleeping with this mask on your face at night. So they're not really medical problems. So sometimes people have issues where they're taking these problems to their medical doctor who prescribed the CPAP, and that medical doctor isn't really perceiving these comfort related issues as being a medical problem they can help with. So we're hoping to kind of plug that gap today and give some helpful tips to help you get used to CPAP. So that's my little intro. So now I'm going to turn to Kath. And if you could just start, Kath, by explaining a little bit about when you were first put onto CPAP, what did the support or lack thereof look like for you?
Well, support, it was actually fairly quite rare to be diagnosed here in the UK back then. Most people didn't even know, they thought that they used to say to me, and when won't you have to use that machine anymore? When will it cure you? Or they used to think it was narcolepsy. And, you know, it's we know a lot more now. We've done our own awareness, and, you know, we've had big campaigns in the UK. So people at least do know what sleep apnea is now. But no, there wasn't support. I have to give credit to my hospital, though. Probably because they had more time in them days without as many patients.
Yeah.
But they did help me as much as they could, because I can assure you, masks were not made, you know, for the, shall we say, normal-sized lady back then. You know, the head gear used to go to twice around my head, you know, to even try and get
sick. So you were finding just that the mask was too big?
Yeah. And the headgear was enormous, you know. It wasn't designed really. Yeah. I mean, thankfully now, masks have come a long way, you know. Mm. I mean, this is a modern, what we used to use back then.
Yeah.
But they were all that style. And that style do not suit everybody.
Right.
And Natalie will tell you that when we do people come to the charity, you know, one of the things we're looking for is the receding jaw. That kind of mask is going to cause problems on the bridge of the nose.
Yeah.
As they try to get the seal here, this is going further back and it's pressing more on the nose. But fortunately, I mean, this is my favourite. This does not make any see it, okay? This is the dream wear. Minimal contact mask. We would always go for that first. But not just the dream wear. There are other masks. You know, there are the AmaraView, the F30 series, the Evora. Have I missed any out? Yeah, they're all minimal contact. You know, and we're talking for full face people here, because there's a lot of good ones for.
So we'll definitely get on to that. So I was really interested in how you actually solved your problem back then.
Well, I've just gone further on in my talk.
Okay.
Wrong way around. I'm getting carried away. So, so those were all the, you know, the masks that, that, you know, we had access to back then. And they're obviously much better now, like I said. But my problem was, by then, I'd realised that my mum had had a fatal heart attack due to no treatment. So there was no way I was going to continue with these struggles, you know. I mean, most of this I've already spoken about. I'm not going to go into that today, because on Emma's previous channel, Sleep Apnea Stories, a year as of yesterday, Emma, the 10th of January 2024, I told a lot more of my personal story, if anyone wants to look that up. I was just determined, as much as I did, don't get me wrong, I didn't like the CPAP, but I knew I needed it. And I did not want history repeating itself and leave my children, you know, without their mum. So, like I say, I was lucky with my clinic, but one of my biggest struggles, because of these horrendous masks, you know, that there was back then was nasal bridge sores, as I've already said.
Right.
And in fact, that was years ago. We lost this for a while. The CPAP moisture therapy cream, which is from the UK. Now, that was Lucil made that, and then they went out of business. So for several years, a lot of people struggle because that really is. A lot of the clinics here call it the magic cream. And I had to bring that in from the USA because the most important thing, it has healing benefits. So it's not just a moisturizer, but most importantly, it can be used safely with our breathing and it won't damage the mask. So,
you're talking about you were getting
the nasal bridge
sore.
Okay. For the
and
nasal bridge. Yeah. And then,
I think was kind of, well, not funny, haha, but like, I think a lot of people would either give up or they would just, you know, kind of think, oh, I wonder what can be the problem. But you got, were you on the internet, like figuring this
out? And, yeah. And I did get help. When I say there was no support, I actually joined some USA forums and I've still got friends, American friends from those days, but there wasn't the support in the UK, not for the struggle, their specific struggles with CPAP, you know.
And so, did you get some of that cream sent from the United States?
Yes, okay. Yes.
And were there other things at that point that you were getting sent?
Yeah. And I used to wake up with puffy eyes. We see pictures in our Facebook group all the time of people really struggling. Because obviously, you know, the mask, I had to have it tight. Because I can promise you, if that mask isn't the right one for you, and if the size isn't right, forget it. You have to tighten it.
Yeah.
If you've got the right mask and the right size, that's a different story. But you've got to bear in mind I was trying to use masks that were not suitable for me, but I needed the therapy.
Yeah.
I've got dreadful pictures and I'm quite an open person, but even I don't share those. Looked like I'd been in the boxing ring.
Yeah.
And I didn't answer the door in the morning.
Yeah, so I think, were there other problems you were dealing with apart from having this bridge of your nose issue? Did you have issues with it not sitting?
Yeah, well, the puffy eyes, like I say, and also the strap, you know, because I was having to tighten them, I had no choice.
Yeah.
You know, big strap marks, you know, across my face. And in actual fact, I notice your ex-president Biden also has the same problem.
I saw that picture too.
There's been quite a few, if you look closely, where he goes out with strap marks, which is not necessary. We don't have to wear our equipment during the day. Yeah, I saw someone at my own GP the other day, and I wanted to stop, but he was talking, and I wanted to say, you don't need those strap marks.
Yeah.
So the strap covers, you know, they were absolutely essential.
Yeah, so for people with the strap marks, definitely straps
are
a great place
to start. The magic. They're absolutely magic. And also the mask liners. There was no mask liners out there. No, not even in the USA. You've got the REM. We've got the Silent Night. We used to do the REMs.
Yeah.
But we've moved on to the Silent Night because the Silent Night ones stick to the mask as well.
Got
that's real sure, yeah. Yeah, if you show
so this is particularly, I think also with so partly for stopping small leaks, like I think
yes.
that can really help.
Yeah, and comfort
also,
as well.
Yeah,
and
like
comfort.
Skin irritation.
You'll,
I think like if there's anybody,
you'll see on my dreamwear. I have one on my dreamwear. Yeah, they must be put on right. But I used to make them. I would like to make it for the dreamwear, mind you. You know, but they were all traditional. So even I could make them. And, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it. But that is an option when people can't afford liners. Remember that, you know. But just one little one and I'll give is be careful what you use. You'll notice I only ever used white T-shirt material. Why did I do that? Because if you start getting colours and you slather, the colour might not be fast, you know? And then also, I've even seen people selling them you know, on places like, what's that site you like?
Etsy.
And they're actually fleece. You don't want fleece. We use fleece for comfort here, but
yeah.
don't put fleece near your mouth because
yeah.
you're going to breathe in. I mean, all this about microplastics and dust and fibres, you know, be careful what you use, you know,
yeah.
when you breathe in.
That's really good advice.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
So, Dr. Silverman, a lot of people haven't really heard about cognitive behavior therapy and how that might be used to help people adapt to CPAP therapy. So I wonder if you could just really give us an overview of what CBT is and just why that might be helpful for people. Like, some of the things I hear people talk about are claustrophobia, and also I feel like so many people deal with taking their mask on and off at night and just not getting used to it. So I'd love to hear your input on that.
Yeah. So for all the reasons that you just shared, there's so many potential factors really impacting the ability to even use CPAP. So, you know, a common theme that I've been hearing you all share is when you get diagnosed and then you're told that you have to wear CPAP, there is oftentimes a lack of support, and sometimes there's even no support. So using more of a CBT or cognitive behavior therapy approach can really help provide that support that I think is so needed when you are told that you need to use CPAP. So in a nutshell, I help my patients really troubleshoot their CPAP use just to make the adjustment process a little bit easier using the CBT. So cognitive behavior therapy, in a nutshell, the cognitive part really explores any negative thoughts or beliefs around using the CPAP. And the behavioral part really explores any behaviors or habits that actually might be getting in the way of using CPAP, or I think for a lot of folks, sometimes even having the motivation to use CPAP. So I'd say the two most common reasons that folks will get referred to me is either they're newly diagnosed with sleep apnea and they're trying to use their new machine, or maybe they have had their machine for a little while and they're really struggling to use it. So maybe it's been a few months down the line and they're still dealing with some difficulty adjusting to using CPAP. So by using CBT, we can really explore any, again, negative thoughts, beliefs, behaviors, habits that actually might be getting in the way of really making the adjustment to CPAP a little bit easier for folks.
Thank you for explaining that, because I think oftentimes people have either never heard of CBT or they think it's only for insomnia. And we should also just mention, did you want to share a little bit about how sleep apnea can run alongside insomnia? I think people sometimes don't realize that those two conditions can occur together.
Yes, absolutely. So this is actually really common, and it's what's referred to as COMISA, so which stands for comorbid insomnia and sleep apnea. And this is also another big reason that folks might get referred to someone like me, a sleep psychologist or behavioral sleep medicine specialist. And so typically when someone is dealing with both insomnia symptoms and also having difficulty adjusting to CPAP, it's very much this combination approach where we really target the insomnia, but in doing so, we can actually reduce apnea severity and actually make CPAP a little bit easier to get used to. So it actually is really effective when we combine CBT for insomnia and also use CBT to help the adjustment process to CPAP. A lot of folks actually see significant improvement in both their insomnia and also their AHI, so their sleep apnea severity.
So like, I think people maybe don't understand, like they're going to come and see somebody like you, but what kind of, like, are they doing talk therapy? Like, do you have specific exercises you do? How does it work?
Yeah, such a great question. And it is personalized to each individual. So it really does depend on what is going on, whether it's something related to actual mask fit issues, whether it's claustrophobia, worry, anxiety around using CPAP. So the treatment is very personalized depending on what the individual is dealing with, what the primary concern is. But just to give you some examples, and it's really hard to explain it in such a short period of time, but essentially, as an example, what I typically start off with, especially if someone is really struggling with actually wearing their headgear and their mask, is to start off with what's called a CPAP gradual exposure hierarchy, which is pulled from what's called exposure therapy. And it's a step-by-step way of really starting to get desensitized or used to wearing your mask or headgear. And so in doing so, something that might be recommended would be, for example, to pair putting on your CPAP mask or headgear with practicing a deep breathing exercise. So oftentimes there is quite a bit of relaxation training that is recommended in combination with getting used to CPAP. So where a lot of people might initially come in and say, you know, sometimes even looking at their CPAP can start to increase worry or anxiety about having to wear their machine, we want to pair the actual physical act of putting on the mask and headgear as a cue or in combination with actually practicing a deep breathing technique. So the mask becomes this cue or stimulus for relaxation rather than worry or stress. So that would be one example. And of course, there's hundreds of ways to practice deep breathing exercises. So I always say starting off really simple and with a breathing exercise that feels comfortable. But that would be something where we'd start off really simple with relaxation breathing techniques as a way to just get comfortable with using CPAP and using your headgear. And sometimes even before you even take it to bed, sometimes we even start during the day or in the evening. I often recommend wearing the mask or headgear while watching TV before bed, just to get really comfy with it. And that can also be a time to incorporate some deep breathing as well. So very much this gradual step-by-step process to get there, but it very much can incorporate quite a bit of relaxation and breathing exercises.
That's great. Thank you so much. And so we're going to go back to Kath, because I want to ask about, I know that at Hope to Sleep, you are helping, I think you're actually physically helping people with mask fittings. So I think, like, we talked a little bit about when you know the mask doesn't fit well, but I thought maybe we could talk a bit more about, like, leaks. How would somebody know that they have a leak in their mask, and how do they know that the mask is fitting well? Like, what do you look for in a well-fitting mask?
It's me, is it? Yes. Well, obviously, you know, some leaks are obvious. You know, it's like blowing up that balloon, like I probably already said, and letting go of it. And mine were horrendous. I was mortified. I was sure the neighbours on our bedroom wall thought I had a severe problem with flatulence.
Because of the noise that the mask was making?
The noise, yeah. It was horrendous, you know. And this is why I started, another reason why I started to make these liners. You know, but some people are actually, now we've got apps, obviously, we didn't have that then, and access to some of the software. And sometimes people are so surprised because they say, I didn't even realise it was leaking. Because sometimes, you know, you just get that subtle, you know, leakage. The other thing is, if you start putting certain things like thick, we see people, socks, some people are using thick socks. Well, that's going to muffle the sound. You know, what is it? Have you seen them? They make a liner out of a sock or something. But the fluffy socks, like I said, there's always the warning about inhaling the fibres. But along with that, it can muffle the sound of the leaks. And then they wonder why they're still struggling. But it's not their fault because they're doing it, making every possible effort that they can. So, you know, some of them are obvious, others not so obvious. But we're talking about, you know, things like learners, but you do have to remember, you know, we do hear of clinics say, oh, right, yeah, here we are, here you are, Emma, there's a lad, off you go. It may not fit you, you know, and this is like why, going back to the mass fittings, this is why people travel from the other side of our country, and I kid you not, they've even arrived on planes. Well, not to Hull on planes because we don't have an airport, but, you know, to the UK on planes, that is no word of a lie, is it? Because people are absolutely desperate. And, you know, I mean, Natalie would probably like to explain that because although I did train Natalie originally, I would say Natalie's even better than me now because she's not at all clumsy like I am. So do you want to have a word about that?
Yeah, so I do the majority of the mask fits at the charity. And the best thing about it is we have a bed. So we actually have two beds now. We've upgraded, we've got two beds, so we've got two mask fitting rooms. Obviously, when we go to hospitals, we get ourselves fitted with masks. We're sat up a lot of the time. Clinics, funnily enough, even though they're in wards, do not have access to beds. So they can't try the masks on. They can't be desensitised to masks as well, because it's not just mask fittings. We also run desensitisation. So I'll have a patient in there for hours, making sure they're comfortable and they're happy. So when they go home, they're comfy. And the other thing that we do as well, if clinics say do have a bed, and they do have, a lot of the time they miss this out, is your pillow. Your pillow is so important with a mask fit. Firm pillows, or we try and say avoid firm or a memory firm pillow. Sort of, we need that medium balance. We also try and avoid CPAP pillows as well, if we can. We just don't find them helpful, and we actually don't sell them. We don't believe.
Actually, before you joined us, we did have a try, and it there wasn't enough people who found them helpful. That was something I did bring in from the USA.
So just to let people know, what we're talking about with CPAP pillows is, I wish I had one. I used to have one, but almost like a cutout so that when you lie on your side. But the problem that I've heard from a lot of people and that I had myself is oftentimes like you move in your sleep, right? So if you were just lying still, it would probably work. But I usually don't recommend people spend a lot of money on pillows.
We don't either. We totally agree with you. You know, I mean, I'm not saying bad way. I mean, they're out there, and there are a lot of people who do like them. When we did have a go at selling them, this was many years ago, and we did get the best one at the time from the USA. The reviews were so low, and we don't like selling expensive things, you know, unless they're going to work, you know, for more than such a small percentage.
I think that that's so important, having people actually lie down in a bed in their normal sleeping position, because even if people are getting fitted here, it's usually sitting up in an office, and lying down on a bed is really important because that's how you're going to sleep. Okay, so here are some questions. So the first one, which I think is such a common question from Lynn, is what about those of us who just really hate the whole CPAP experience? Like, what, you must come across these people a lot. Like, what kind of words of encouragement do you give people?
Well, firstly, to remember, even just, you talked about 25,000 people, which most of those are on CPAP. There's more than 12,000 people in our Facebook support group. None of us would choose to use CPAP. Always remember that. Sometimes when you're struggling in the night, remember someone else will be struggling. You know, we all know. So we don't choose CPAP, but CPAP is the gold standard treatment, and we can't get away from that. Me personally, you know, despite all my problems years ago, you know, I cannot believe I'm even on this webinar, you know, trying to persuade people to use it because it works. Now, yes, there are other things out there. Vic Veer on his channel, Professor Veer, he's spoken about three different implants. By all means, look into that. But while you're doing that, please use your CPAP because we know it works. Come support. If you know, like I say, nobody likes it. Join others. We're all in the same boat, you know. We all empathise. You know, in our group, you know, have a rant. You're with the right people. We can rant with you, you know, but we can support you as well. Just try your best to use the CPAP, knowing it is the gold standard. Always aware that in the future, something else might work for you. But the problem we're at is that it's not always one thing that'll work for you, because a lot of the, you know, we do sleep studies on people who are using, say, mandibular devices. And, some will just treat perfect, but there are a lot where it's partly treat. Well, you, Emma, you use a mandibular device as well as CPAP. Why do you do that? You know?
So so I really appreciate that question, just because there, a lot will have the same sentiment. I would just say that, so the last session we did as part of the Sleep Apnea Squad series, we covered all of the different treatment options for sleep apnea in an hour. And so we're working right now on the toolkit for that, which people will be able to print out. And so I think that exactly what Kath just said, what I never want to happen is for people to struggle with CPAP and abandon it and not go back to their doctor, yeah. Right? You know, like, try all the different, you know, things that we're talking about today. But if that doesn't work for you, that's okay. But what I really don't want is for people not to treat their sleep apnea. So there are resources, and we'll make sure that there's links to our past session below this video for people.
I'm looking at the advice. In fact, Farah has got a link to share, because we can't cover everything today, which is under the help and tips on our Hope to Sleep website. It's just a page with practically every problem we can come up with. So, but really try and join groups. You know, there's plenty in America and we've got ours in the UK. Join groups, join other people, you know, toss around ideas, because we all help each other. And we'll learn as well. We learn every day. We learn something new.
So we have another question, which was definitely on my list as a really common problem people have. And it says, it's from Cece, and it says, sometimes my mouth gets so incredibly dry. You know, she's saying, is that because it's leaking? But what are the reasons for the dry mouth and how can people address it?
Dry mouth. We go on and on. We've actually got on our own YouTube channel, as part of, it'll say, in the description, but we've actually done a webinar ourselves on this, because it is so important. You must not tolerate dry mouth, because it will cause gum disease, tooth decay. A lot of the people, when they're complaining about the teeth, just assume it's because the mask is pressing on them. It isn't. It may be as well, if you're having to do what I used to do. But the biggest problem is the dry mouth. And I don't think we've got to hand. But if you have a look on our website, but you can get them in the USA, and they're called Xylimelts. That's XYLII.
Melts.
Xylimelts. I can't believe we haven't got a packet here. And you just, it's a little disc that you just pop on your gum. They are amazing. We have people not just purchasing them for, our condition. We have people who've had to go through cancer treatment, and the treatment, you know, is a dry mouth. We have people with Sjögren's disease. But obviously, before going to even Xylimelts, remember CPAP humidifiers. I don't know how it works in the USA, you know, because obviously your insurance pays for things, but a lot of the time people are giving CPAP and not even told there's such a thing as a humidifier that attaches to the CPAP machine. Always try that first. I honestly believe everybody should have a humidifier, even if they don't use it all the time. Certain seasons, you know, you might get a drier mouth. When you've got a cold, you need more lubrication. In fact, when you've got a cold, it's handy to have a full face mask as well, because it's hard to breathe through your nose.
So yeah. We just had another question, which leads straight into that, which is, somebody said, can you use CPAP when you have a cold? So this is one that I have dealt with a lot myself. And yeah, so just to echo what Kath just said, when I was pretty new to CPAP, I didn't realize humidifiers were a thing. And I, similarly to you, this was back in 2008. So I was looking on some of these like old fashioned forums to try and get answers. And yeah, during that, there was, you know, a lot of people were talking about humidifiers, and I had to buy a separate humidifier to fit onto my machine. So that is a really good thing to mention. But so yeah, going back to colds, can be really, really difficult to deal with all the nasal obstruction.
We encourage it though. We absolutely encourage it, because anybody who has a cold, even people without a diagnosis of sleep apnea, will actually probably have a lot of apneas, even though they don't normally have sleep apnea. And ours gets worse because it's difficult to breathe properly. So if possible, and again, on our website, if you do a search, sleeping with CPAP with a cold or something like that, it's so important. There's so much you can do. If you have a backup full face mask, it will help you, because, you know, even the best nose breather in the world will get congested with a cold. That can help. Also, we must never put anything in our humidifier at all. But you can just get, you know, Vicks we have here. Albus Oil, I'm sure you have those in the States, do you? Albus Oil and Vicks. Yep. If you just put a little pee, don't put it up your nose. If you look at Vicks, it actually warns you, do not insert Vicks in the nose. But if you put it on a little tissue near your air inlet, and then the aroma will come through the machine without harming the machine, and without it being too intoxicating for yourself, and that will help you as well. So there is a whole article about that on the site.
That's great. We're going to be sharing all about your resources. We're putting together resources like for our thing, so we'll be able to share those direct links. Okay, so really quick, let's see. So from Martin was asking, last week I developed cervical, I can't pronounce this word, spondylosis.
Oh, yeah.
Top of the spine. My mask is causing unbelievable pain. At the moment, the advice I got was don't use the CPAP.
Don't listen, Martin. You will probably also are on medication, strong medication, if you're in a lot of pain like that. Depends on your medication, read the leaflet. It will probably say, you know, that of the health risks with sleep apnea. So please, please try. If you're in our group, start a post on that, you know, in the Facebook group, Martin. If not, feel free to join us. Lots of people will help you about that. Please, you must wear your CPAP machine, and especially if you're on medication.
And also talk to your doctor for sure, and like keep going back. Like if that's what they're telling you, there's got to be
other... I would imagine it's a GP saying that though, rather than the sleep clinic.
So the next one I'm an absolute expert in, which is from Nadine, is saying, how do you cope with bloat from swallowed air? So there's something called aerophagia, where some people deal with, instead of the air going into their lungs, like it goes into their stomach and gets trapped. So there's a couple of different things. Like I would say, again, like people tend to deal with that less if they're not breathing through their mouth, right? So if you can do a nasal pillows or a nasal mask because your nose works well enough, then that can sometimes help, and keeping your mouth closed helps with it. But for me, that wasn't an option. So there's a couple of things I usually have found, like certainly in terms of like dealing with the discomfort when you wake up, there's some pretty simple, so I think it's the University of Michigan has a thing on their website that we'll link to, where it kind of shows a really simple way to massage. You can do self-massage the correct way around your intestines, and that will get rid of most of that air so that you don't have the flatulence during the day come up like at times that you don't expect it. And so also along the same lines, bicycling your legs can help relieve the wind before it becomes a problem. So those are...
Well, if you don't mind me saying, I had a really bad problem with that at the beginning, which was caused through these bad masks and mask leaks. I was gulping it, and I used to wake up in the morning, and some days for 2 hours I couldn't even walk properly because the pain was so bad. I didn't know in them days it was called aerophagia. And it very rarely happens now. One thing I will say is that it is quite common when you first start CPAP. Another thing, what you were saying, Emma, is, you know, about nasal masks. Yes, if you can breathe through your nose, that'll help. But remember, there are some people who are given nasal masks who actually aren't okay, and they will swallow air if it's the wrong kind of mask for them, because, you know, they can't breathe through the nose all night. So there's a few reasons. I think for me, my reasons were badly fitting masks, you know. And like I say, it rarely happens now, but there is a good, we've shared it for years, Lanky Lefty, I'm sure a lot of you know. He's got a couple of videos about aerophagia. You know, and coal, apparently, is it coal? I've said the right thing, coal. Do people have coal? Someone else?
Charcoal.
Apparently that can help. I've never had it myself, that's why. No, don't go and eat black coal.
So we're, as I knew would happen, like we're kind of running out of time, but I wanted to go back to Dr. Silverman, but first, we had a question from Rachel. Is CBT support available in the UK?
Yes. The CBTI, now you caught me off the hop because I can't remember them all. One of the things, you know, Sarah might, you know, come across as well, is that sometimes if people have... they're struggling with insomnia, but they haven't got a diagnosis of sleep apnea. So often, I'm sure you found, Sarah, that they, you know, that's often the root cause of the insomnia, but you don't know that at the time. And I'm sure you're, you know, very aware of that and question people in case they do have it, because it's very hard, isn't it, to deal with insomnia when there is an underlying problem that people don't know about.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So Dr. Silverman, I guess, is that something that you come across, people who come because they have fragmented sleep and insomnia, and then they actually end up with a sleep apnea diagnosis? And then the other thing for you before we wrap up, it's just kind of like to normalize for people, you know, that this is a challenge for a lot of people. And also to kind of ask, like, do you see patients that no matter what you go through, they just can't adapt and they end up doing a different treatment option? Because I think that's one of the things that people tend to feel a lot of shame if they can't make this work for them, right? And we hope that they can. But if not, I don't want people to leave feeling shame about it.
Yeah, there's so much shame around using CPAP or not being able to use it. And yeah, it's incredibly common. And unfortunately, I don't think it gets talked about enough how difficult of an adjustment it can be. And so I always encourage folks to really have a upfront conversation with their doctors, their sleep specialists, about what options they have. Because sometimes folks are told, here's your CPAP, and there really isn't a conversation about what other options are available. And so it does become this thing that they have to use. And if they don't use it, then sometimes they're even, you know, for lack of better words, kind of threatened that their machine will be taken away if they don't use it for a certain number of hours. And so that puts a lot of pressure on you to have to use it within a very short period of time when that adjustment process can take a while. And I know everybody's different, but for most of the folks that I work with, I'd say on average, the adjustment process is anywhere from 3 to 6 months, sometimes a year, sometimes more, depending on the individual. So it isn't something that most people will get and be able to put on and you know, say, oh, I'm good to go. I mean, of course, there's a few folks where that's the case, but I'd say the majority of folks, that isn't the case. And they really do struggle with getting comfortable with it and really incorporating it into their nightly routine. So I think it's really important to just normalize how long the adjustment process can take and know that there are folks out there who do want to support you along that journey. Although I know it can be hard to find the support, but these days there are so many amazing folks who are all about this, like you all in the UK, Kathy. And, you know, this is just such an area where I feel like now more than ever, people do have more support options. So I think it's important to have a conversation with your doctor. And if you're not really being, you're not really getting that conversation about other options, perhaps finding another specialist, because you deserve to know what other options are out there for you in your specific case. I think that's really important, to advocate for other options if CPAP really isn't working well for you. So that, I think, is such an important conversation to have. And to answer your other question about folks who might come in with insomnia, it's actually very common to have, you know, what might look like sleep maintenance insomnia. So really having that sleep fragmentation and waking up multiple times during the night, having difficulty falling back asleep, could very well, you know, look and present like sleep maintenance insomnia, but could very well be undiagnosed sleep apnea. And I see this to be the case a lot in women, especially because a lot of doctors, you know, if they don't fit that classic stereotype, if you will, it gets completely overlooked and undiagnosed. So it's incredibly common. And it's certainly something where I'm often encouraging the folks I work with to go back to their doctor and say, look, it's worth getting a sleep study, looking into this further, because they're really struggling during the day. And I think that's the most important thing, is getting people to a point where they know that they have options and can actually feel their best during the day.
Yeah, we found as well, there are a lot of people with insomnia, and when they do treat the sleep apnea, it does stop the insomnia because it was the cause. But then there are also people, as you know, that it becomes a habit, really, doesn't it? You know, your body starts waking up because it's always woken up, you know, and they really do need that help. And this is when we do give the links in the UK to three different programs where you can try, because you can get it on the NHS as well in the UK.
And one last thing for Dr. Silverman, can you maybe share about how somebody would find a CBTI professional in their state, or especially in America? Mm-hmm. But I think there are other groups in Europe too. But
there are. So the best places to search for either a clinical psychologist, or typically it's a mental health provider who also specializes in behavioral sleep medicine. One would be the Society for Behavioral Sleep Medicine. They actually have a directory where you can search based on location. So in the US, there's a map of the US. You can pick your state and you'll see folks who are trained in behavioral sleep medicine. There's also an international part of that too. So you can kind of search based on your country. So that's a really amazing resource. You might have to, depending on where you live, actually reach out to folks and inquire about whether they actually do provide CBT for CPAP use. So that is a little bit of an extra step, but there's definitely quite a few folks to reach out to, depending on where you live. And then there's also the University of Pennsylvania CBTI directory that also has an international directory. You can pick your country, you can pick your state, and you'll be able to find folks who are trained in behavioral sleep medicine who may be able to offer CBT for insomnia as well as CBT for CPAP use.
That's great. Thank you. Okay, so, well, thank you so much, Dr. Silverman, and also Kath and Natalie from Hope to Sleep. I really appreciate all of your insights. So really quick, Felix was asking, Does CPAPs not have a built-in humidifier? I'm newly diagnosed and haven't started CPAP yet. So the question, the answer really is yes. Now, almost every model you see has a built-in humidifier. What do you think, Kath?
Well, I was going to say the actual ones that are truly built in is like the, that would be the Fisher & Paykel Sleep Style.
Yeah, and the DreamStation 2.
Yeah. At the moment, you have to buy the DreamStation 2 with a humidifier, but every machine has a humidifier, but they don't all come with them as standard, so you would need to look, you know, for one.
Yeah, I definitely recommend that you do that.
I would, 100%, yeah.
And then really quickly, oh, this is actually a good question. So Teresa is asking, what is the ideal pressure if mine is always at the max of my range? I think she means APAP range, of the prescription, should the pressure range be increased? So that's definitely a conversation with your doctor. They get all of the data from your machine. So next time you know, go and see them and say, do you think this looks right? Or any concerns you have about pressure, that's a prescription. That's not a comfort thing. That's like, go and see your doctor.
But I would say if that's happening, and most people do have apps, if it's happening and your HI is shooting up above 5, you know, that definitely wants a chat with your doctor, because it could be a sign, yeah, that it needs up in.
Kath and Natalie, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been lovely seeing you again.
You too. And there's a bunch more links that we can share from the Hope to Sleep website. But I do really just want to shout out their Facebook group. Even though it's in the UK, the Hope to Sleep support group on Facebook is really the best one, just because it's so, I'm not just saying that because Cass here, but in terms of like the amount of doctors that are involved with it, they have it really well moderated. And it's really, really supportive and friendly. So even if you're outside of the UK, that's a really great Facebook group to engage with. Project Sleep is not the only nonprofit working in this sleep apnea space in the US. So there's also the Alliance of Sleep Apnea Partners and the American Sleep Apnea Association and the Reggie White Foundation. So for particularly anything to do with if you can't afford to get your CPAP, like you get prescribed it, but you're not able for whatever reason to fill the prescription, the American Sleep Apnea Association and the Reggie White Foundation both work to get people the CPAP equipment that they need. And then also, I did list a whole bunch of international organizations. So this is Kath and Natalie's Hope to Sleep right here. And so sometimes it can be really helpful to connect with people in your own country. And then just to kind of give a shout out that we do have a national sleep helpline here in the United States, which can help with navigating through, you know, which kind of doctor you need to go and see. Just anyone with any sleep issues can call this. So yeah, I just wanted to shout that out. And then also we have a program called Rising Voices, where we train people living with sleep disorders to share their stories and become patient advocates, sharing about their own experiences in their community. So I did this program, and it runs for 6 weeks over the summer. Part-time, you do it remotely on Zoom. And I can't recommend it enough. Like, since I did this program, I've spoken at so many different places. It just really helps you to hone your own experience and share good information with people. Make sure you're following Project Sleep on socials, or check out the website, project-sleep.com. And also, our work here wouldn't be possible without individual donors like the people watching, and also our corporate sponsors, Lilly and ApneaMed. And the biggest thank you is to everybody tuning in. We really appreciate you being part of our community. So the toolkit, the PDF toolkit I talked about during the session, will be coming after the session. And so if you want to get that direct to your email inbox, you can sign up for e-updates. Also use the hashtag Sleep Apnea Squad if you want to share about your own experiences living with sleep apnea on any of the social media that we're on. So that's all I have for you today. And I really appreciate you tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.